Opinions of Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman don't reflect the views of Gal Media. Parental discretion is advised. KFNC Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gal Media station.
All right. What are the odds we have the best fill-in guest ever today? Percent 1,000. Let's do this. It's a Wednesday on the Blitz.
And here we go.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And The Blitz is on for Wednesday. Welcome to the greatest show in the history of the known universe with me, Fred Fowler, the Falcon. A very special guest today, which I'm extremely excited about. And Jong Lee, the master. If you want to get in, 713-780-ESPN's your number, 713-780-3776. You can also hit us up on the Blitz Facebook page. Find the Blitz, click like, put your comments on there. There's also Twitter, at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R. Today, it's at RJ in Vegas, at Jong Snow with a zero, not an O, at Degenerates 975. You can also text the show, 713-780-3776. And it's a Wednesday where we usually do things a little bit differently. We put odds on everything. So if you call or text or tweet or send a raven or whatever you do, just put odds on it. Or more, you know, more accurately, percentages. But that sounds like crap. What are the percentages Wednesday? But it's going to be 100% that it's a great show today because I am extremely excited to have for a full 3 hours the man behind pregame.com, I think the most legendary betting expert on the planet, our good friend RJ Bell. What's going on, RJ?
I got to tell you, Fred, I've got like 10 minutes of questions just from that intro. Fred the Falcon? What's that about?
Don't ask Never me heard. Where that came from. We had this bit early on when we first started where I was giving everybody else nicknames, so they decided to give me one, and then for some reason that one stuck.
It's kind of like George Costanza and Tebow, right? You're giving yourself the fact. I think you came in, maybe paid someone 20 to say, what about Fred the Falcon?
I wish I'd thought of that. I couldn't have afforded to afford 20 bucks back then, man, when we were first getting started in this business. So
now here's another question. I don't want to get the show, but I know you've got extensive preparation. At the beginning, it says AJ and Fred's opinion are not those of Gal Media. So it's like everything you guys think, Gal Media thinks the opposite. It's not necessarily, because usually they say not necessarily those of Gal Media. They're saying there's no chance we're going to agree with anything these guys say.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's accurate. I'll let you in on a little secret. That's kind of a running joke that we absolutely threw in there, and you'd be surprised how many people take it incredibly seriously. So
I had the feeling that you guys were like, it's almost like someone that got suspended, you know, it's like, yep, I got suspended. It's like they're proud of being so non-corporate.
Well, we have been suspended. That has happened. But that was before we were, you know what, this is like a record for us because since we've been owned by Gal, neither one of us has gotten in trouble for anything to get us suspended. We've gotten reprimanded for things. But we haven't gotten suspended. We were suspended when we were owned by Cumulus. So
now, does that concern you that as the years go by, you're losing your edge?
No, but we have not pepper sprayed anyone in a while. Maybe that's what we need to do. I think I think we have a great company here that realizes that, hey, okay, this is what these guys are going to do. Occasionally, they're going to say something stupid that pisses people off. So, oh well, and yeah, that's pretty much how it works.
All right, last question for your intro is with Zhang, he's the master. Is that like an Asian kind of inference?
A little bit, yeah. It's supposed to be okay. Sort of subtly racist.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I picked up on. I was just asking.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's just there's a lot of subtle racism on this show. And Zhang is our resident Asian, although he is probably the worst Asian we've ever seen when it comes to math, if you can believe that. But
well, why else would he be producing your show, right?
Exactly.
He didn't say no to Google to come produce your show.
Yeah, or Yahoo or anybody. But he does a pretty good job at this, though. So we're happy to have him. And
man, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, he's great. So and actually, I got to give credit where credit's due. When we were talking about fill-ins, he said, "Hey, I'm going to ask RJ to do one day. You think that's cool?" I'm like, I think it's a great idea. So appreciate you doing this for one thing, because you're a huge star now, and I know how busy you are. So I'm guessing you had to cancel like 12 show appearances today just to do this.
You know, what's funny is, you know, I say it on our segment every Friday at, you know, 5:30 Houston time is, you know, we get to dig deeper. And the funny thing is it goes in both directions, right? When we do our segment, we dig deeper into the games when there's games that matter. And then when there's not, you know, on Twitter, someone mentioned, oh, we're going to hear a lot of Zeppelin talk. And then someone else mentioned, oh, we're going to hear about funny movies. And it's great that we've established, I think, a brand with our segment. And you and AJ get a ton of credit for this, because it's really unlike any segment I do. Well, it's more like a podcast. We take our time and talk about things deep if they need to be, have some fun if it's there to be had. And, you know, the reality is most radio, and you guys are not like this, but most radio feels like, you know, 2 minutes of hubbub in between the live reads. And there's a reason that in many, you know, for many people are moving more towards digital media. And I think you guys having that hybrid between the energy of radio, because let's be honest, a lot of podcasts are boring unless you're really into that niche subject. And for you guys both to have the energy, but to be as conversational as some podcasts, I think it's I really think it is the future of broadcast radio, and no wonder you guys are having such a success. And quite frankly, it's my pleasure to be on, Fred. Obviously,
well, I'll just give you a little insight into that. We both hate traditional sports talk, and neither one of us wants to do it. The reality is, we try to be the same way here, and I think you've spent some time with us in Vegas. We're kind of the same way. You know, we just try to let our personalities
except run. Except you're drinking nonstop in Vegas, right?
Pretty
I don't think
much,
you're drinking nonstop. Which brings up another point. I was looking at your Twitter today, and it's got a picture of you, like, it looks like you're ending a marathon. And somehow you're leaning forward, so it looks like you're, like, trying to beat the tape, like to just get first play. I mean, how long did it take you to find that angle? I got to tell you, it doesn't feel representative. I mean, when we had the Peruvian chicken a couple months ago, and you were like hunched, your shoulders, you look like Tony Soprano at Vesuvio, and you're eating, and you're kind of looking up to make eye contact, but your mouth is still in the plate. That would have been a more representative picture.
Well, I'll try to find something better, because that, but that was, I put that up because that was my first half marathon, and that was about mile 10, and I literally thought I was going to die at that stage, because I was fine.
When did you complete this?
This was a year ago, about a year and a half ago now. And then
I think it's got 6 more months. Then you've got to either run another half or change it.
Well, that's the plan. I'm training up to another half marathon, which will be sometime in early next year. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay, I'll hold you. I'm going to put that in my Microsoft calendar. We'll be checking in 6 months.
Well, we'll see if I live through this one. It was funny. First 10 miles, I was fine. I was like, I got this. And I'd never run farther than 7 miles in a race in my life. So I get to 10 miles. I'm like, this is easy. I got it. And all that's left is basically a 5K. And that's about when it all hit me. And I'm like, you idiot. This is way too far for you. So,
but you did finish.
I did finish, yes. It was a very slow time, but I did finish it. And I at that point, I swore I'd never do another one. But then trying to get myself back in shape and do another one again, and I'm about 10 pounds away from the weight I was when I ran that one, so I'm getting there.
You know, it's funny, because I used to hate, you know, everyone that's older than a kid was once a kid, obviously. I used to hate parents or adults kind of giving you life lessons, right? Which in hindsight was pretty stupid, but hey, that's kind of fun to be a kid, right? Because you can be stupid, and there's usually not a bunch of consequence. But I always hated youth is wasted on the young. And I tell you, I'm 46, so I'm sure in 20 years I'm going to look back and go, oh, it was so great to be 46. You know, it's the old saying is, you know, you're never going to be younger than you are today. Today's the youngest you're ever going to be again. But I remember when I was like 16, 17, and there was a 5K. You know, obviously, 3.1 miles. But, you know, I was, you know, playing high school baseball, and you know, it was the summertime. My best buddy called up, and it was like 7:30, and he said, hey, we're going to run a 5K at like, you know, 9 or whatever. And I'm like, okay, yeah. So I throw on my tennis shoes, run. Now, I wasn't a great athlete by any stretch. I'd say fair to middling, as they say. And I remember, though, I ran a 24-minute, you know, 3.1. So not bad, not great. And then we had a baseball game that night. We went to the pool, you know, all that stuff. So then, like, maybe when I was 35, so 10 years ago, me and a buddy said, okay, we're going to race a mile, and we're going to train for a few months. And, you know, we bet, like, $1,000. You know, it was like the poker guys, but not as big betting. And I trained and trained and trained. I ended up running like a 7 minute and 55 second mile and beat him by about 5 seconds. And then it dawned on me, wait a minute, I ran 3 miles at 8 minutes, getting out of bed and putting on my shoes. And then 20 years later, and now I'm guessing the over under is not 8. Let's just say that.
Yeah, it's funny. I hated running when I was, I played all the sports, but basketball, I could play basketball all day. And we would a lot of times. And, you know, even in my 20s, we'd get up at 8 in the morning, go start playing ball, break for lunch, and then play again all afternoon. And you know, I just wish I could have that body again. You know, that's one of the things you look back on and say, man, I wish I could go all day like that again playing basketball. But the reality is, you know, all I can do now is make this what I have left as good as I can make it. So that's what I'm trying to do. We'll see.
Last thing on this, but it is, you know, kind of going the other direction, is, you know, my grandfather is 94. And, you know, still kicking. Last year or so, you know, you hit your mid-90s, it's tough, right? But even a year ago, he came out to Vegas for Thanksgiving, you know, I guess less than a year ago, and, you know, went dancing and all that. But here's what's funny. Italian, 100% Italian. His mother and father were both born in Italy, came over when they were in their 30s. He was some of his siblings were born over there. He was born here. So, you know, salt of the earth, worked for a steel plant for 35 years. Back in Ohio, and he never worked out till he was like 55. And I remember him having a pot belly. You know, I was, you know, 5 years old or whatever. He was a pot belly. And then one day he said, you know, I'm going to quit smoking cigars and I'm going to start working out. And it's so funny to think it's been 40 years since he was 55 that he's been, you know, or so he's been working out. And within a couple years, he was in amazing shape. And it just goes to show you, you know, you never, one day it's going to be too late and you won't know it, right? And then right. It's over, heart attack or whatever. But is even, you know, as you move towards 60, and obviously you're much younger than that, is if you decide you want to take it seriously, it can make such a huge difference the rest of your life. Because you just don't see people in their 80s that have any quality of life that aren't thin and fit, right? And exactly. And that's the thing. We can debate all we want. I see 80-year-olds smoking. Obviously, smoking's not good. But you see more 80-year-olds smoking than you do fat 80-year-olds. So I think that it's never too late, but you never know when it is too late.
Yeah, well, and that's why I'm trying it now. But, you know, I've done this before and gotten in great shape and then screwed it up again. So the key this time is once I get back to where I want to be, I'm staying there. So that way, hopefully, I'll live a little bit longer. That's the plan. All right, we got to take a very quick break. RJ Bell is our guest today. So if you got questions that you want to hit him up with, get us on Twitter, get us on the text line, and we'll dive into anything today. We'll be right back. It's The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Got it.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. No A.J. today. Instead, we have R.J. R.J. Bell joins us, pregame.com. You know him from the Friday segments and the fact that he is one of the best gambling guests you could ever possibly have. But he's a lot more interesting than just being a gambling guy. So we're going to get into a lot of other stuff today that we don't always get into in that segment because most people tune in because they want to hear us go back and forth on betting trends, especially when football starts. But I do think we have fun with some of the other topics. And RJ is a pretty well-rounded guy. But I did have a few things I wanted to ask you just because, you know, I want the listeners to get a better sense of how things kind of got started for you. I'm just kind of curious, you know, why you started pregame, what kind of gave you the impetus to do that, and how you built it into what you built it into, which is just one of the best sites out there.
Well, I tell you what, I grew up, and we referenced it last segment, in Ohio, 4,000 people in the town, right? Coal mining town. Dad was a coal miner. Mom, a school teacher, both retired. And I just really felt different, you know? And where I, and again, not to disparage, because in so many ways, what I learned back there and some of the, you know, salt of the earth type lessons were so important. And to be honest, some of the people I do business with and compete against that didn't have that kind of upbringing, I just think it's an advantage, right? If you understand, you know, obviously people who grew up in Manhattan or even, you know, upper crust of Houston, they're going to have a different experience. Prep schools and tutors and, you know, SAT help and all kind of great things that, let's be honest, it's great stuff, right? But it's usually one or the other. It's hard to have all the privilege and also, you know, seeing a lot of unemployed people, a lot of poor people working, you know, for less money. And, you know, growing up in the 80s, it was really the bridge of that, right? In the 70s, coal mining was booming. I mean, my dad got out of the Navy, and he was in the Navy for 6 years, and he was a machinist in the Navy, right? So he had a skill coming out, and he could have went to college and became, you know, a lawyer and probably not made as much money as he did as a coal miner, right? But then in the 80s, that started to change. And to me, I was like, I don't, you know, coal mine, that doesn't sound fun to me. And I was an intellectual fellow, right? So I read a lot, and back then, pre-internet. And it's just so, for those who are, I guess, you know, what's it been now, 20 years, right? So if you're less than 30, it's really hard to understand pre-internet. But anyone above 30, it's like wherever you were, you got the newspaper, right? Finally, the USA Today came around at some point, right, in the mid-80s or early 80s. But other than that, I remember going up to the convenience store, right, which is a 7-Eleven type, and there'd be a magazine rack. And I was, like, fascinated by, like, this almost dispatches from outside, right? Because there was, like, 13 channels, right? There was three when I was a little kid or whatever, four with PBS. But then it's, like, the magazines, I could read about the outside world. But that was it, then the USA Today. But here's the thing. There was no internet, as I said. So what was I going to do with this intellectual curiosity? I wasn't going to invest in stocks. You know, I guess I did start investing when I was like 15, but, you know, like buy three shares or whatever. But then I saw a spot sheet, right? So for those that don't know, that's like a parlay card. So we talk about who's going to win, you know, Houston's favored by three or whatever. But with a spot sheet or a parlay card, you have to bet at least three in upwards of 12 or 15 games. So three pays 5-1. Four pays 10-1. So I said, I was 14 years old. I said, well, I know the NFL. I'm going to bet this. And I went 4 out of 4. And I tell you, Fred, I'm sure you've heard a lot of gambling stories. It's usually when you win that first bet, right?
Yep.
It gets the hooks in. Agree or not?
Oh, absolutely. That's how I got into horse racing. I hit my very first bet, and it was pure luck. And from there on, I just wanted to learn everything I could possibly learn about it.
And here's what happened. So I got paid, and it was 10 $20 bills and an envelope, a bank envelope. I put it, you know, in a safe place. And then every week I bet 20 until the envelope was empty. Never won another one until I emptied the envelope. Ended up getting, you know, the bug. And to me, it was great because I could apply. It was almost like stocks, right? If you're going to, you know, look at stocks. And remember back, Family Ties was on, which was an NBC show that really was a big show, right? It was right after the Cosby Show, but there was Alex P. Keaton, right? So he was all into finance and everything. And I used to like Alex. And I had one younger sister, so it was kind of analogous. And I have, you know, not past tense. But, and so I loved it, right? Because it was an intellectual pursuit. And literally, and this is a true story, is by the time I was 16, 17, I was betting $200 to $300 a game, which is kind of crazy because now I'm betting, you know, a dime a game. So like to think I've only gone up 3X, right? But
right.
I was betting, you know, upwards of $300 a game. And the lines were so easy to beat. It's always easy to look back and say it, but I was winning like consistently because no one was halfway even smart betting with these local bookies. So if you were even halfway, you had a big edge. Right now, everyone knows every line move 40 seconds after it happens, right? You go to pregame.com. We've got a game center now, which is unbelievable. It gives you the money coming in, the ticket count. It's like a stock market kind of page. But back in the day, you would call a score phone and try to, you know, find out what the line was. And that was my big edge, Fred. You'll appreciate this, is I would get a line at 6:30 from the bookie Eastern, and I could bet all the way up to 7:25. They were only open for the hour or so, but they would not move the line. So I would handicap like 8 games that I like, let's say, of all the games, and say any line that moves a point in my favor from the number I got in the close or the number at 7:25, I'm going to bet. So I would call the score phone right at 7:25, get the line update, then see based on the line move and bet 2 or 3 games a night. And listen, if you have any kind of handicapping, plus you're getting an extra point because they weren't moving the number, I was beating the heck out of it. So did quite well there. Went to Ohio State, got a finance degree, did quite well there. And, you know, I guess we're giving the bio. So got accepted to Harvard Law School, which I'm proud of. Didn't go. I was sick of school. And went, and pretty much a couple years later, I moved out to Vegas. And, you know, we'll kind of go back and forth. I'm sorry for the monologue, but it was kind of fun to tell the story. Is, you know, out here, I figured, hey, I'm going to find everything I was looking for. And the reality is I didn't. And that kind of segued in, and we can talk about it, into why I wanted to build pregame, is I felt like that what a better really needed wasn't really there yet.
Yeah, and it's funny because one of the things that you talk about with the information now, there's so much more and all the things that you guys have. I think some of that is in a way your fault, because you kind of made this mainstream by all the appearances you did, starting with Colin and doing our show and all things you've done on ESPN and stuff. And everybody else has kind of followed suit over the last few years. And when we first started this show, when we were talking about betting, we were talking about betting actual money. People were shocked because they're like, "Oh, you know, you got to use a euphemism." It's like, no, we're betting money. And but it's also with the technology, I think is a big part of it. But now the way you've treated it like a business, the way you have treated it like it's a stock market, I think it's become a lot more acceptable. I think it's one of the things that's going to help eventually get it legalized, but people take it a lot more seriously. That also makes it harder. It's harder to beat a bookie now because they have access to all that information as well.
And I think it's more important than that, because I think Fred, you're as sharp as they come for a radio host and literally, you know, like a professional level guy, in my opinion. Obviously as a host, as a writer, but I'm talking about as a Vegas guy. But I would, and again, maybe if I clarify, you can tell me, I think you're going to agree. It's not so much the bookies know what the bettors know. The bookies know how to leverage what the bettors show them through their bets. So think about it. Let's say there was going to be a free throw shooting contest between you and AJ. And I had no idea who was better. I look at you guys, you look about equally athletic. Now, if I looked at your picture, you know, in the 10K, I might think you. But let's just say we even it all out. It's about even. And I'm going to say it's pick 'em, right? 100 free throws, pick 'em. Who's going to win, Fred or AJ? Well, if I'm willing to take bets early and I keep the limit fairly low but not crazy low. So let's say eventually I'll take 1,000 a bet, but initially I'm going to take 200 a bet. Well, if everyone's betting AJ like crazy, boom, 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 I'm going to go to AJ -2, -4, -6. And eventually I'm going to get to a certain number, and then I'm going to get some Fred buyback. Now, I guess since I'm talking to you, I should have went the other way. But okay. And then I would know you've reached that resistance point, and maybe it ends up being AJ -5.5, and now I'm getting equal action. It cost me those initial less than limit bets to find that out. And the better my opening number can be, if I would have known enough to know in this hypothetical AJ was better, I might have opened at 3.5 -3.5 for AJ. And then I would have only had to take 2 bets to maybe get to the 5.5. So yes, the bookies are good, but they're not good at handicapping. Because I can promise you, there might be 3 or 4 bookies in the world. And let's make a distinction between bookies and bookmakers in Vegas. A bookie is someone who's booking all the action, and they're making a bunch of money, most likely. And it's illegal if you don't live in Vegas, and it's gray if you're offshore. And if you're the barroom bookie, it's clearly illegal, right? The guy you meet at the bar or whatever. Okay, fine. Now, in Vegas, they don't own – none of the bookmakers – you've heard the names, right? None of the bookmakers own any of the action. They're getting paid a salary. Amongst those salaried bookmakers, a vast majority would want to be bettors if they could because they don't punch a clock. They're not in the meetings at 8 a.m. You know, it's a great life. It's a dream, right, being a bettor. And thus, they know a lot. They know more than 99.9% of people, let's say, but they certainly don't know enough to be professionals, or they would be. What they do know is how to read the way the money's coming in for them and the screen, which means where it's coming in other places, and they get to that right number quicker. That's the skill set of a bookmaker, not knowing who's going to win and lose.
All right, that's RJ Bell. We got a lot more to get to. Don't worry, we'll get to some more specific gambling stuff here before the show's over. There's just a lot to get to.
Fred, I thought you were going to say, hey, we'll get to the stories of the day. You're saying we're going to dig even deeper than this.
Oh, hell yeah. What the hell? We got you here. Let's do it.
Hey, listen, I won't say the hourly. I am getting paid X per hour for this. And I tell you, I haven't worked this cheap in a long time.
Well, we appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. We will be right back. It is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Hello! To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.
Nobody pray for me. It been a day for me. Yeah.
Listen to your favorite ESPN 97.5 show on the go with the ESPN 97.5 app for iOS or Android. Now back to The Blitz with Fred and AJ.
And we are back on The Blitz. It is Fred and RJ today as RJ Bell joins us from Vegas. And RJ, I wanted to ask you about something because a lot of media outlets are putting out their NFL power rankings. And I know you like NFL just a little bit. Vegas does its own rankings during the season. Do you have preseason rankings that Vegas puts out too, or do they wait until the season starts?
And really, you know, and that's something interesting on Twitter. There's a lot of talk about, you know, we'll say, hey, these are our Vegas rankings. And it's like, you know, is this the chamber or Chamber of Commerce putting them out? So what we tend to do at pregame is have a, you know, Steve Fezzik is our senior NFL handicapper, only guy to win the Super Contest twice, which is the World Series of Poker of NFL handicapping, and he won it back-to-back, and no one's ever won it twice. So really a sharp, if not the sharpest public NFL handicapper, I think, that's out there. And then we'll get, you know, one or two other cappers, a couple of bookmakers, and then put out the power rating. So we do ours. I haven't really seen much, you know, any other organization that has that kind of approach. I've seen individual power ratings, but not the idea of the collective IQ. But when we do that, we will have preseason. And then what's always interesting throughout the year is seeing how much change there is, because what you always see, and we'll be talking about it in week 2 and 3 and 4, is a team that was supposed to make the playoffs starts out 1 and 2, and all of a sudden everyone overreacts. And in the long run, what you end up seeing is that the amount of reaction off those first couple games when there's unexpected results is usually too much. And that's a great lesson to come into the season. If there's a 1 and 2 team that you think is still good, look to play on them.
And I think how much separation is there in your mind between the Patriots and everybody else before the season starts here?
Not much. I really believe this is something I haven't heard anyone else talk about. And if so, I'd like to read about more about it. What makes the Patriots so awesome? Is it the domination? It's like, well, let's think about this, right? They were less than 30, let's call it 30%. When they went for that 2-point conversion, they were less than 30% to win that game, because you're only going to make the 2 about half the time, a little less really, statistically. But let's say with Brady, it's half. And then they had to go win overtime, and they weren't necessarily going to win the toss, right? That was 50-50. So when you're, even after an amazing comeback, obviously they were humongous underdogs at the worst point of that game. And then you go back to Seattle, and let me ask you, Fred, what was the odds of the Patriots winning when Seattle had second down and two on the two late in that game?
I would guess it was probably about 25 to 30% would have been my guess.
Yeah, that's it might be a little high. I would have said 20, 25. Okay. So they're not dominant, right? They haven't won one Super Bowl by more than 3 points. Am I remembering that right? Or some stat like that. It's the fact they're so consistent, right? They don't miss the playoffs. What was it with 11-5 with Cavs was the last time. So Pittsburgh is maybe as, you know, my team, I'm a Steeler fan, is maybe as good as them during their good years, right? And sometimes they beat them and sometimes they don't in the playoffs. But during the bad years, Pittsburgh doesn't make the playoffs. So during the bad years, the Patriots win the division and still have a chance to get hot. So to me, what you're betting with the Patriots isn't that they're that much better. You're betting that they're going to be there every year. And thus, if you're there, and especially if you win your division and get a top two seed, you only got to win 3 games. And at least one, if not two of those are at home. And if you're the number one seed, you never have to play a road game, you know, calling the Super Bowl neutral. So I think it's more about that. One caveat, I think New England was one of the best teams last year, and they ended up improving. So I think it was one of the great off seasons for a Super Bowl winning team. So maybe that distance has increased a little bit, but man, it wasn't much last year.
At some point, doesn't Tom Brady have to start showing some age? Couldn't that affect things? The guy's going to be 40 years old, and he hasn't shown any signs of slowing down, but neither did Peyton Manning before he suddenly went to total crap. I mean, he set a record 2 years before he was awful the year they won the Super Bowl. Doesn't he got to slow down at some point?
For sure, right? Jerry Rice would have been, you know, to me, and again, we're getting long enough away from Rice where it's starting to feel like you're telling stories. Whereas, you know, growing up, it was like this is, and it's funny because I think it's still certainly the truth is, if you would say the distance between Jerry Rice and the second best receiver is bigger than the distance between, I don't know about Ray Guy. You always hear about Ray Guy and how good he was relative. I don't know about that. But, I mean, who would be in the – if you would say at a given position, and let's group positions, like linemen, right? We're not talking about left guards. Is receiver, running back, quarterback, you know, think about the categories of positions. Jerry Rice is number one, the distance to number two. Who else is even – like what other position would you say the distance between one and two is even close to that?
I don't think there is one. I think whenever you talk about the greatest players – regardless of position, Jerry Rice is always in that conversation. As far as wide receivers go, I think the gap's bigger than it is anywhere else.
I would agree. And Rice was, you know, they always tell the stories where he had his boot camp and, you know, a guy who's becoming, let's say, 32, and he's thinking, okay, I've got to really start taking care of myself. I'm going to go work out in the summer with Jerry. And they always tell the story that, like, they're ready to, you know, throw up. And it's like Jerry's like, okay, we're halfway done. You know, like they thought they were done, but it was like halfway done. And then it happened, right? It just happens. And, you know, as Mark Jackson says, father time is undefeated. The question is, how does it happen? Because with most positions, it's you're this, you know, you're a 90 out of 100. Then you're an 87. Then you're an 82. And eventually you're a borderline starter. And that, you know, Hines Ward's a great example, right? Great Steeler. I liked, you know, enjoyed the way he played the game. But he went from being about averages last year to saying, okay, I'm going to hang it up. It doesn't happen like that at quarterback, right? Especially in the modern era. It used to, right? You used to see quarterbacks drop off. Now they drop off the planet. I'm not exactly sure why. I love, you know, like Mike Lombardi and the true scouts that understand that level the way I don't. But my sense is you're right. For sure, the best bet of the year is that's going to happen. The question is when. And the question is it a drastic drop off? Or somehow with Brady, will it be more incremental?
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I've got a question about the Dallas Cowboys for you. And I want to get your take on it. And, I think it's sort of a betting question, but it's more of a question about the team in general. So we'll do that when we come back. That's a radio tease every now and then. I'll throw those in there to look like I'm a professional. So so we'll do that when we come back. Quick break. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Then you're
97.5.
Howdy, Houston. Dave South here. Sports! Sports!
We're back on the Blitz. I want to remind you, you're running out of time to get signed up for the inaugural Touchdown Club of Houston Poker Tournament. It's Saturday, 6 o'clock at the Whitmire's Distillery. And if you haven't signed up yet, get signed up now because it is pretty close to filling up. I will be out there a little early. And come on out. You can taste all the great Whitmire's stuff. Your entry fee gets you Damaris Barbecue. It gets you Carbach. And there's all kinds of a silent auction with a football signed by Lamar Miller. There's a Dallas Keuchel Orange Astros jersey that's been signed. Deshaun Watson Texans blue jersey. A George Springer ball. A Nolan Ryan ball. All kinds of stuff. Five slamma jamma all at the silent auction. So come on out and play Saturday. It'll be a lot of fun. Plus you get access to all the great stuff they have at Whitmire's. And you heard Chris on the air with us yesterday. We brought us some of the single barrel, and you can get that at the distillery. It's hard to find anywhere else. So come on out. That will be Saturday night at 6 o'clock. RJ Bell is joining us, and RJ, I promised you a Cowboys question. You know, one of the things I like to do is compare different pools that I think are related in terms of betting. And in most of the future odds I've seen to win the Super Bowl, Dallas Cowboys are the second favorite. No lower than third in most places, but pretty much the second favorite. But when I'm looking at their win totals, it's only 9.5. And I'm wondering, if you're really that highly regarded as a Super Bowl team, don't you almost have to go over 9.5 wins?
Well, how many teams in the list you're looking at have over 9.5 or 10 or more wins projected?
Not many. And the Patriots are up there. Most of the numbers are around 9, 9.5 are the big numbers, with the exception of the Patriots.
That's my point, right? I think Pittsburgh's there on most lists. So parity is parity, man. And it really is, other than the Patriots, as we talked about last segment, it's, you know, yeah, teams are going to go 13-3 because of the ball bounces their way a few times. But even good teams will sometimes go 10-6. And if you think back, and again, I'm super familiar with Pittsburgh, you know, the years they won, you know, they were a wild card team when they won Super Bowl 40, and they were the second seed, but I still think only 10-6, if I'm remembering, when they beat Arizona. So other than those rare teams that the ball just bounces right, is you're going to have even the good teams in that 9 or 10 range. I do think you're making a, when it comes to over under, right? Obviously the end result for some of them will be better and for some will be worse. I think you make a great point though. Whenever you have multiple betting pools, so betting options that are separate, so over under win total one, future bet for the Super Bowl two, whatever is the sharper pool, you can see where there's disparity and say maybe there's some opportunity the other way. Now let me give you an example from dog racing, which I'm guessing applies to horse racing because you're the expert at that. Is you look, especially if it's not a big bet track, is in the Perfecta pool or the Quinella pool, so some of the exotics, there's not that much money. So if you actually look at the win, place, and show pool, and more the win pool, let's say, which has more money, and you see a horse or a dog or a horse is, you know, the second or third favorite. That, let's call that the true price. Though it's not really true, but a truer price. And then you see, hey, that dog with the fifth favorite is paying like 200-1, like some extreme outlier number on the Perfecta. Well, yeah, once you bet that, it's going to affect the parimutuel and all that. But there's ways, and I've seen people or read about people with computer programs where they're looking at the last minute, seeing where the disparity are, and making bets into the exotics. First of all, have you heard of that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of where this question came from, is because, you know, in those sports, you can odd shop in different pools and see where there's money and see where you have opportunity to get the most possible
value. And one of
value.
Them is going to be your guide, right? If you're doing right. Your own handicapping, you don't need a guide. But even if you don't really know what you're doing, you're there just socially, but you're throwing down $5 here or there, is look at the sharper pool, let that be your guide, and then go find in the less sharp pool opportunities.
Yeah. I have a question here for you that's kind of on a different subject from Lamont, who's one of our regular tweeters. And I think it's kind of interesting because I want to dive in this a little bit because now Las Vegas is going to have a hockey team and a football team. From a football perspective, he asked you, with Las Vegas getting a team, is that going to instantly create a new group of Vegas gamblers that are basically just homers for the local team?
Yes, but I think it's going to be a small percentage, right? If anything, I think more that people who are purely recreational will be betting more Raiders than they typically do. Are we going to get people who wouldn't have bet anyway, but now the Raiders are here are going to bet? Maybe, but I think that's a small group. But it does speak to a great concept. And it's how much of the betting is truly trying to win and all the pain that goes along with it, right? Because everyone or almost everyone wants to be thin or fit, right? And the question is, are you willing to say no to that cheesecake, right? Some people are never willing to say no. They're 350 pounds. And then you've got the people who say no, you know, most of the time, but they're 20 pounds over, right? And there's people who wouldn't do it. You know, Tom Brady will never have a beer, you know, ever, you know, I think is the way it is, ever. And they're going to be, you know, exactly the right way. So it strikes me that people think, who wouldn't want to win at betting? But it's like, yeah, it's painful. You can't play every Monday night game. You can be down a half a unit come settle up Tuesday, and you're not going to fire one extra game just because you don't want to go pay the man, right? It's like playing the poker. You're down. You feel like you're slipping. You're down $30, so it's about break even, but you don't want to book a losing session, so you stay. And you lose a $700 pot. I mean, that happened to me a dozen times before I figured out I'm leaving minus 30, right? Because I don't care as much about booking that one minus in my spreadsheet versus playing in a non-optimal way. So I think that's so important. And, you know, it segues in to a question we asked in the first – or you asked in the first segment, Fred, is I think one of the things we do differently with pregame – I don't try to appeal exclusively to the 3% of professional bettors. And I think that's about a fair estimate. Of everyone who makes a bet, about 3 are professional and 97 aren't. Now, it doesn't mean that the 97 who aren't are all losing big time, right? You can be a non-professional and still, you know, win some, right? If you're winning a lot, you probably become a professional. So to me, they're looking for really advanced stuff. And I'll be honest, there's some good sites, not usually sites, but blogs that do a great job of that. And if you're really looking to dive deep, do some Google searches and you're going to find some, you know, a PhD literally in, you know, artificial intelligence who's talking about his algorithm to beat the NFL. It may or may not work, but it's going to be a high level discussion. I could have as much of that as I wanted, right? Most any of those blogs or many of them would want to republish at my site and get exposure and all that. But to me, I'd rather put my time in of all the listeners out there. I bet about half of them don't bet at all. And I bet half of them amongst the ones that bet, a vast majority are betting 10, 20, 30, 40 bucks a bet. And to me, allowing them to have more fun as opposed to trying to have these antisocial, usually personality disorder type. And I'll tell you, you never want to go to any professional better party because it's going to be the worst experience you ever had. These people are troubled because they're usually smart enough. And this is what people hate to admit about themselves in the industry. They're usually smart enough to become lawyers and doctors. If you could win at sports betting, you can much more easily make money somewhere else. But they're saying they either hate dealing with other people or they hate bosses or some combination so much they'd rather struggle not to have a boss or coworkers. Well, you can figure out how good they are working with people, right? I'd much rather make it more enjoyable, even if they don't win, because most people betting sports will not win. It's hard to win. But if you like it and if I can help you lose less, well, then I've done you a service. And that sounds ludicrous from all the, hey, you're going to live in a mansion if you follow me. But I think us admitting how hard it is to win is one of the great differentiators of pregame.
Absolutely. Good stuff, man. That whole hour's already gone. That was fast.
So we're one-third of the way through.
One-third of the way through, yeah.
I think I'm gonna quit monologuing and let you jump in a little, Fred, to save my voice.
Oh no, no, you're doing great, man. Keep it up. Easiest hour I've ever done. All right, quick break. It's a blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Happy birthday, ESPN 97.5. 97.5. We're 10. If you thought we were degenerates before, wait until we hit puberty.
Hold on to your butts.